Hey everyone, a little update for you here. It has been an amazing experience for me to play a part in spearheading this concept of podcasting for tourism destinations. You know, we started out a couple of years ago doing this, and luckily we had some wonderful that were willing to be guinea pigs to kind of work out the kinks in this product. And now we really do have a done-for-you podcast product that in most cases is turnkey. We now manage over 20 podcasts, and we are adding more and more every week. And I really feel like the question now is not if you're going to have a podcast in your destination, but when. And the reason that podcasts are so important for tourism destinations is it's a way to create an owned media channel with evergreen content that allows you to control the narrative about your destination and to produce content in the preferred method of consumption, especially for a younger audience. If you think you need to level down your audience, meaning go for a younger audience, you really ought to consider a podcast that allows that audience to consume your content passively. They can do it while they're at the gym. They can do it while they're driving in their car, in the shower, folding laundry. Doesn't matter. They can do it on their terms. They're in control, and you create the content in audio form. It's been a great, great product for so many of our destination clients that are working with us right now to build those podcasts. And we can't wait to help any of you that are interested. If you'd like to learn more about a podcast for your destination, reach out to me directly at adam@relicagency.com. I would love to talk to any and all of you that are interested in doing it. Once again, message me directly, adam@relicagency.com. We'll get you going, get you a podcast for your destination. You, your stakeholders, and your visitors, along with your locals, are going to love it.
It's not always about the money. It's about giving them the training they need. In a hotel where you've got a really nice hotel and the people that are staying with you are making six figures or more and they're making less than $20, they need to be able to take on a conversation and feel good about the situation. That's the whole reason behind this. I don't like people to sink. I want them to swim.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. As always, we've got an excellent show for you today. It's a good friend of mine. Her name is Tammy Reist, and she is the president and CEO of Visit North Alabama. Tammy, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We powered through the technical difficulties, and we made it happen.
We did. That's great.
Hey, Tammy, so I'm excited to chat with you today. We've got several things I'd like to cover, but maybe just to get us started, I'd like to ask you, we've got a couple questions to break the ice here. So first of all, what is your dream destination, Tammy? If you could go anywhere in the world, where would that be?
Well, you know, I actually just went on my dream destination, and it was to the Holy Lands. I went for 2 weeks, had a great time, great experience, and actually went right when the war broke out, and but it was wonderful to get to experience Jerusalem, Bethlehem, all those wonderful places.
Oh my goodness! Okay, so I've got to ask then, since you were there at that unique time, how did your experience change as the war breaking out developed?
Well, you know, everybody was really concerned about me, but I was like, you know what, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. And I actually went with Faulkner University and some of the students there, and it was amazing. And so I didn't let COVID beat me down. I just kept moving forward, and we had a great time.
Awesome. So tell me some of the highlights from your trip.
Well, one of the highlights was that I had to take 6 COVID tests during this, and you know, the CCC would change a lot of the guidelines. So we had literally taken a COVID test. And we were flying from Rome, Italy, over to Tel Aviv. And we start checking in at Rome, and half of us got checked in, and one of the tellers said, y'all don't have the right test. So we literally had to stay the night in a nunnery in Rome, Italy, which was fantastic because I got to experience Rome at night on scooters, so it was really great. And then we flew out the next day. And of course, I'm the one that had to go through all the search and all that exciting stuff. But we made it. And like I said, it was a wonderful trip. I encourage anybody, put that on your bucket list because it's amazing.
So you mentioned that you went with a group. What you said it was with a university, but what led to you joining the university on this trip?
Well, one of my best friends, they had the opportunity to go with their children at a very discounted price. And she was divorced. And so she asked the school, she goes, can I take a friend? And I said, yeah, you can take your friend. And so I got to go with her and just experience that with a lot of the school that was there. They were actually there for 2 months. So that was just one of the components. I mean, they got to tour everywhere. I mean, they went on a cruise afterwards. Yeah. So if I could have 2 months off, I could have kind of saw the world, but I had to get back to work. So,
yeah, you know, those dang day-to-day responsibilities just get in the way, don't they?
I know it.
So Tammy, tell me that obviously was a huge check off of your bucket list. What's still on there that you haven't hit yet?
Well, I bought a motorhome right before the pandemic hit. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is to travel all these different places. We just got back from out west, Wyoming and all that, but it's to travel with our motorhome. It's a really good way. Our grandkids love it. We took them to Disney World in the motorhome. And, you know, it's kind of like having the convenience of home, but you're still outdoors. And we're finding that it's really a great niche marketing with used to, I thought it was just older people that had these motorhomes, but now we're seeing it's the youngsters that have it. And just getting out and meeting people and, you know, doing fun things, building bonfires and building relationships.
I like it. So you've used that as a way to connect with your kids, it sounds like.
It is. In fact, my youngest son bought a pop-up on steroids is what I call it. It's one of these that it's not your traditional pop-up. It has air conditioner and all a bathroom. And so we travel, and it's funny because now the grandkids are like, I'm going to maybe in pawpaws. They've got like this house on wheels. So we get all of our kids and enjoy them.
Okay. So the byproduct is a great way to attract the grandkids over to your motorhome instead
That's
of
right.
the parents' pop-up.
That's right.
I love it. Well, so Tammy, I appreciate you sharing a little bit of your travel habits with us. I'd love to hear a little bit about your background and maybe what led you to get into tourism and where you are today.
Yeah. Well, this is 36 years that I've been in what I call the hospitality industry. I started out working for hotels, and then I wound up meeting some interesting folks that believed in me, and I started building hotels for this group of doctors. I was able to help them with 8 hotels building, and when I mean building, my owner had a heart attack and wound up in the hospital, and he said, I need you to finish these jobs for me. So I kind of learned this hard knocks, but it was really great because I'll never forget, I had a book that our general contracts had given us. And when they would say, oh, there's going to be a change order because you know, this costs a little bit more. And I go to my book going, no, it's not. And so I actually saved my company a whole lot of money. And because I was, you know, on my game. But I love the part of building. I love the part of seeing something start from the dirt and build up and then training the people. I love seeing that our scores were very good. I know one of my courtyards got the Hotel of the Year award for the Southeast region. And it was amazing, you know, what you can do if you just put your mind to it. So stayed in that arena for a long time and then served on many boards. And one of the boards I served on was our tourism board. So when the director that I had hired left, the board said, why don't Tammy apply for this job? But I love the hotel world. But I made the switch because I knew that I could do more in this capacity of educating my people in the tourism world, that I could bring more heads to bed. So that was something that I really enjoyed doing and seeing it flourish. So I know when I took the Decatur Morgan County CVB over, I guess it was in 6 years, we went from a $300,000 budget to when I left about 800,000. So
wow.
Left it in good hands.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah. And then now I have a 16 county area that I oversee, and it's going well. We just got a great report card from Smith Travel. If you look at Alabama, North Alabama especially, we've hit every mark from our occupancy. We're the only one in the state that has had the high occupancy. Of course, everybody pretty much with inflation and cost of rooms operate rate-wise have been great and RevPAR. But for our Huntsville, Alabama area, which falls in my region, we have more rooms under construction now. So we're going to be adding 1,511 room nights per night just in North Alabama. So that's great. Knowing we're supposed to be in a recession, we seem to be doing very well.
That's excellent. And real quick, I didn't hear how you ended up from Morgan County, Decatur to North Alabama. What made you make that jump to the North Alabama side?
Well, I had served on the Alabama Mountain Lakes Tourism Board on their executive committee, and the director that was over it said, you know, if I ever leave, I want you to apply for this job. And I'll be honest, when she decided she was leaving and said apply, I wasn't ready to go because we had just did a huge development at Ingalls Harbor. Ingalls Harbor, actually, there was an Ingalls Shipyard in Decatur, Alabama, that packed up many years ago and went to Pascagoula, Mississippi, which is doing extremely well still in Pascagoula, but we were left with an eyesore. And so I took the eyesore, found the funding mechanism through lodging, and we created Ingalls Harbor, which is a place that you can launch 10 boats at one time. There's a 35,000 square foot open air pavilion with a lot of green space. And it's on our main way into the community. So we took an eyesore and made it beautiful. And we had just broken into lacrosse and all the different sporting aspects. So I wasn't ready to leave. So I left. And wound up the person that took my place, you know, I knew there'd be changes made. And I just said, if there's one thing, do not change. And she said, what is that? I said, never stop surveying your visitors. Because if you ever stop asking the questions why, you'll never understand the outcome. Because we all are storytellers and we can tell our story. But if you're going to really want to know the behavior, ask the questions and then read the surveys. And so it was really interesting. The first survey she put out after I think it was a fishing tournament. And she asked the question, you know, tell us, you know, what you spent. And their first answer was, I bought a Chevrolet truck. Normally we hear gas, food, went to the mall, but this person bought a truck. And so I said, well, good. Did you tell the truck company, did you let Chevrolet, Lynn Layton Chevrolet, know that someone, because of your tournament, brought the visitor? And she said, no. And I said, well, do that. So when she did, he said, oh my gosh, well, we need to help you. Could we be a sponsor? So again, I tell people, if you don't ask questions, you're never going to know what could be an opportunity for you. So from that survey, and then relaying the message back, now she has a sponsor to help her that could save her money and actually help with other events.
I love that. Boy, I'd love to see the economic impact per visitor on that specific event. If you've got somebody coming in and spending $50,000 on a truck, I would say that you average that out across everybody. It looks like a pretty darn good economic impact event.
It is.
Well, awesome. One question that I thought I'd just go over with you is, you and I met, it was unexpected. I was on an in-person tour where I was taking the Destination Marketing Podcast to multiple locations. And even though you and I didn't meet when I was on that trip, I ended up meeting up with Malia and grabbing lunch with her and touring a couple of your destinations. And then shortly thereafter, I believe I had a voicemail from you saying, hey, we want to talk about this podcast thing you're doing. So I'm curious, what made you decide to start your podcast? What's the experience been like? And then I'm going to have a few questions about, you know, has anything surprised you as you've gone through that process? Has there been byproducts or benefits or you know, detriments that that maybe you've experienced that you weren't prepared for?
Well, I'm going to go back to, I feel as though tourism, we are storytellers. And people get information in many different ways. Some still get the traditional brochure, which we do give a lot out. A lot of people, like my grandchildren, they're YouTubers. You know, that's where they go to learn. But adding podcasting has become that added layer. And I was speaking the other day at an economic development meeting, and I said, how many of you listen to podcasts? No, my first question was, how many of you have a podcast for your business? And out of the 50 people, there was probably two, but how many listened? It was about half. So I said, this is a story. You know, you're listening. Why don't you get yourself on this podcast? And so I learned through a lot of the data when we were researching. And I asked Malia, I said, Malia, would you like to add podcasts? Which really meant, Malia, would you like to add another job list to you? Well, Malia, if you know her, she's a huge Instagrammer. Oh my yes. God, that is her forte. Well, now I have to tell you, she is loving podcasts. And then to find out, we received a Muse Award for our podcast, which has been extraordinary. And we actually gave her the award at our annual conference Thursday. And just to see the gratitude, to me, that is a validation. That is a big deal. It's an international award. It's a big deal, not only for us, but for Relic. And so I would say, and I say this to everyone, if you need a tourism podcast, you need to get with Relic. They're great to work with. And I'm not meaning this, but if I can take an employee that had to add another job, and yet she loves on Mondays to record these, you know, that's something good.
Yeah. I got to mention that I looked at her Instagram actually today, and I saw that she did a little photo shoot with that award, and I thought that was just so awesome, and I'm really happy for her because she's put a lot of time and effort and probably heartache at different times into making sure that the podcast is what it should be, and I'm just thrilled to see your organization and Malia specifically win that award.
Yeah. And so we're excited. We want to actually put the little Muse symbol up on our Relic podcast so that it shows that validation. Again, that not only can you be a one-woman show, but you can do it and also win at it. And I think that's amazing. So I know there's a lot of tourism organizations that may have 10 people. And we're one, and you still can do extremely well with one if you have the passion. Even if you do want the podcast and you're not the one, you know, to handle it, you know, Malia is one of these that she's willing to help others to kind of get that enthusiasm going, or at least to find someone that may be able to take that on and to help support companies. So it's been great for us. And we've actually been running a lot of our podcasts as advertisement, just like we would run, hey, check out this new trail. To us, they go to the podcast, they get to hear from the consumers about what's going on. And it just gives a wonderful validation to come and see us and just to check out the stories.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about the strategy behind your podcast. Who are you speaking to? Obviously, you mentioned that it's storytelling. Who are you talking to? And then how are you leveraging that in your community?
Well, she maps out. We speak with anybody from people with our parks, our state parks. We talk to our attractions. We talk to people like our baseball players. Trash Pandas make the playoff. So being able to speak with them, we're waiting to get Ben Lovett, who is one of the Mumford and Sons that has the Orion Amphitheater, which just got our attraction of the year. So just being able to get on and talk with people like that, it gives them that opportunity. And it also allows them to be able to take this and link to their site so that they can share the story as well.
Yeah, I love it. So tell me, what kind of feedback are you getting from the community about your show?
We're getting great feedback. People love it. They find it very interesting. You know, I know myself, I told Malia, I travel so much. And, you know, when she puts out a new one's there, I turn it on and listen to it as I drive. And I'll just find myself start laughing, you know, because Malia has this enthusiasm and she has this laughter about her. And just listening to the way our people react to different things that they're working on within their attraction or along their trails. Listen to our ambassadors that share, you know, stories along the way and tips for people. It really just adds more value than a typical brochure, a typical video. It's live. It's real. It's the human people talking to each other and giving them the points that they need as they make their travel.
I love it. Okay. So, you know, we've talked about the podcast, but when you and I had dinner down at Southeast Tourism Society, it was so clear that you've got so many major initiatives going on right now that there's no way we would fit it all into a single episode. So I'm curious, of the many things that you're working on, what is it that you're most excited about right now for Visit North Alabama?
I think there's two things that I'm really excited about right now. But number one is, you know, as we talk about how we get our information, whether it be through podcasts or brochure, whatever, the same thing we're seeing is the way where travelers stay. They either stay in campgrounds, they stay in hotels, they stay in yurts, and now they stay in people's homes through short-term rentals. And so we know that a lot of our DMOs or our CVB directors are relied on lodging tax. That's how they're funded. And so a lot of our places that have diverted to short-term rentals are not getting that. So I worked with Shannon Gray, a friend of mine, and we saw that the state of Alabama has around 32,000 short-term rentals, and it grows all the time. And so we wound up finding a way to buy the data and to start sharing this with our communities. A lot of our communities have been trying to find addresses and stuff, so we found this company, Granicus, that helped us to get that. And so now we're getting ready to help the state of Alabama bring in $36 million worth of lost revenue to the general fund, about $6 million to tourism. So that's one thing I'm really excited about. It doesn't cost the short-term rental anything. They're basically collecting the tax and then remitting it back to the state, which is helping. The same data I'm getting, I'm doing group calls and meetings with the different counties and cities so that they can start that same compliance in their communities. And then today we just found out we got a huge grant, and it's to do training. I helped create this program called Flawless Delivery, and it's where we take in our hotel partners. We put them up in a hotel overnight. They get to experience what the guest does. We train them on common pitfalls. We work together on issues, and then they graduate. And then when they graduate and they stay with that company for a year, we give them an incentive. And that incentive is we give them a $1,000 package. So they pick 16 places that they could go. They have a choice, kind of like their dream place. And then I give them a report card and they inspect the place they go. So it gives me that information back. So we just found out we got the grant for $1.3 million.
Oh, congratulations.
So over 2 years. So again, it's just going to help build that rapport and help us train a lot of our folks that may got, you know, they got a job and they just kind of got thrown in there. We're going to take them and work with them and try to keep them to where they'll continue to be in this industry like I've been for a very long time. So,
that's great. So you talked about two things there, both of which I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about. So let's go back, first of all, to the short-term rental situation that you mentioned, that you were able to find a company called Granicus that could pull the data for each of the short-term rentals that are in Alabama. And you're sending that information to the state so that the state can actually start to collect on the revenue. And I think this is interesting because a lot of sometimes there's a little bit of a negative dynamic between the DMO and the short-term rentals because these owners don't necessarily understand how it all works. And so they don't even know that they're shorting the state all this money. And like you said, it's a cost that gets added to the reservation and gets collected. And so it doesn't cost the actual short-term rental owner anything. And so I'm wondering, what's that process been like of getting that data? And then tell me about the company, exactly how they're able to pull the type of data you need so that other destinations that are listening might be able to capitalize on this if you've benefited from it the way you have.
Yeah. We actually, when I've been working on our short-term rental for years, and then I finally did a study on Jackson County, one of my areas. They wanted a new hotel. And so I said, well, let me do a study for you. And the Smith Travel Report, when the study came out, they were very flat. So then we bought into what's called AirDNA. And AirDNA, they measure your short-term business. And we saw we had a 41% increase. So Jackson County went from having five hotels in 2008, or five short-term rentals in 2008, and they're about 350 today.
Wow.
So that's the reason, you know, the market is shifting, and they'll probably never get a hotel unless somebody shows them both these data. So from there, I heard from talking to Peter Bowden from Columbus, Georgia, that they use Granicus. So when I met with them, they gave me kind of a tutorial on, you know, what all they do. And so I reached out to Nashville, who was one of their customers. Nashville brought in $2.6 million just in additional lodging in their first year. So I don't know how they pull the data, but from the data I get all 67 counties in Alabama. I get a picture of the house. I get where it's located. I can get the rental history on it. I can get the owner's name and where they live. And so I don't think a lot of people, you know, realize, again, that we, you know, they're to pay this. But the reason I wanted the data was I wanted the short-term rentals. We are doing a tabletop book, which has no advertisement. All it is stories. And I wanted that to get into those homes so that if somebody chose to go to Huntsville, Alabama and stay, if they saw this beautiful book in the home they're staying in, it said, hey, check out Muscle Shoals and come see Fame Recording Studios and Jackson Highway. It would be a way of which we can continue to, you know, keep our customer maybe spending a night at night or coming back. So that was my true reason behind it. The other thing is, as I kept hearing, and it's something we're hearing all the time, lack of workforce. And then number two, we're hearing about the fact that our rental properties are going away. Where's all the rental places going? Well, they've turned to short-term rentals. So again, being able to say, you know, if I used to could rent a house out for $1,000, but now I can rent it for $300 for half the time, you're going to wind up choosing, hey, less wear and tear, I'll do a short-term rental. And so it's not going away. It's something we have to embrace. And so by doing this, we want our short-term people to know that they are part of this industry, and we just want to work with them. And so this is what I look at. It's a win-win.
Great. Well, everybody that's listening, I would take a look at Granicus and see if you can get the data for your destination. This might close the loop on something that we've struggled to figure out for quite some time. And clearly, Tammy's happy with it. Nashville's happy with it. And what was the other destination that you mentioned that was using it?
Columbus, Georgia.
That's right.
Yeah. We are the first one with Granicus that has done this statewide. You know, and I have to give all the praise to Lee Centel, because as I'm sharing with him and having him a part of the Zoom meetings that we had, and when he heard how many we had, and just like when you have Auburn football or Alabama football, homes open up more so in those communities during those days. Same thing with the World Games that we hosted in Birmingham. They had over 300 homes that opened up during that time for them to make money. And so we just want to make sure that that money is being collected to help those tourism folks be able to bring more people to their communities. And that's going to help the short-term rentals as well.
Great. Well, the last thing I want to touch on here, Tammy, is this grant that you received and the training that you're giving, especially to the hotel and hospitality employees, I think it's a fascinating model, because it's one thing to teach somebody and to have them kind of listen to you talk all day, right? And hear your opinions on how they should be doing things. But then to immediately go stay with another hotel partner and evaluate what their experience is like, it's the application that really forces someone to learn. And so I think a lot of these programs that are out there, these training programs that help the hospitality industry understand how to handle customer service, I think that's what they're missing, is like, how do you put it into practice? But asking them to immediately go evaluate is the part of this that I think is really interesting from what you've done. So what made you decide to use that tactic of the immediate implementation or the immediate evaluation? And then what have you seen? I guess you probably haven't had a chance to implement because the grant is so recent, right?
No, I actually did two pilot projects, and I had got a small grant to do one. And then the second one, we were not able to get the grant because they said, unless your service industry is making a minimum of $15 an hour, we can't secure the grant. So I said, you know what? We're already in the playing field. We are going to continue on with this. But what led to me is when I used to manage hotels, you know, I learned that everyone is different. We all do things differently. And if we can kind of, you know, bring in our staff, let them be the customer for the day, let them stay in the hotel, see the common pitfalls that may be there, inspect that room, it brings a whole different way. It's like I used to tell people, if you see a spot on the wall and you continue, nobody fixes it, then all of a sudden that spot on the wall goes away, you know, in your mind. And so when we did the first pilot on this, I'll never forget, it was a girl that worked at the hotel we were staying at, and her remote control didn't work. Something very little, but to somebody that's, you know, worked all day and they want to watch, you know, The Bachelor, or they want to watch something, let's say they're wanting to watch a football game, and their remote doesn't work, and they have to walk down to the front desk, and then all they need is batteries, and there's no batteries. You know, the customer's hot now, and so that affects your guest service scores. Well, she had been that person that would be, we don't have any batteries. No, we don't have that. And so she saw firsthand what that did. And she said, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make sure we have batteries. I'm going to make sure we have remote control. So when it happens to you is when you learn to change the game. And so again, I was excited. We did 50 employees, and out of the 50 employees, we're celebrating 1 year. I'm getting ready to pay out $30,000 in trips. So,
wow.
Yeah. So the turnover that used to be a whole lot more is less. And the great thing is, a lot of these people that went through the training, they now have moved up into another position. So that's what I'm very proud about. It's just trying to grow up our people and let them know. We invest a lot in the top brass, is what I say, like the managers or salespeople. But what are we doing for the front line? Other than saying, we're going to pay you a lot of money if you'll come and work for us. It's not always about the money. It's about giving them the training they need. In a hotel where you've got a really nice hotel and the people that are staying with you are making six figures or more, and they're making less than $20, they need to be able to take on a conversation and feel good about the situation, not being thrown out there and saying sink or swim. So that's the whole reason behind this. I don't want people to sink. I want them to swim.
I love that. That's a great finishing quote for you there, Tammy. I really appreciate that. I appreciate your partnership and your experience and your willingness to share with the industry. If people want to learn more about some of the initiatives that you've talked about today, what's the best way for them to do so?
Well, the best way is we have our website. It's northalabama.org. And on that, we have a We Cares page. You know, a lot of people have a LinkedIn, which we do. But one thing that we've learned, not only do we want to market, but we want to give back. And so the We Care section on our page breaks it into four categories: education, workforce, advocacy, and wellness. And so on the education side, you're going to find the information on Flawless. You're also going to find some wonderful stories during the pandemic we did a campaign called Be Kind, because we knew there was a lot of people in our industry that were being basically bullied or beat up because the lack of service, having people there. And so we put together real stories from real people in the industry that shared what was happening with them. And so one of the things we say is everyone has a story. Somebody may be going through something. So just be a little bit kinder in this world today.
Great. Great. Tammy, thanks again for taking the time, and really appreciate everything you shared with us today.
Well, thank you. And again, congratulations to y'all on our wonderful Muse Award. So
that's right. Our award-winning podcast.
That's right. That's right.
Love it. Well, thank you, Tammy. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please don't forget to leave us a rating or a review. It really helps us continue to grow and develop our podcast and bring you incredible guests like Tammy. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and have a great week.